edition of Awesomania. It is me, Mike, being joined by Mr. Fatimus Prime, Matt Carroll.
What's up, buddy?
Hey, buddy. It's been a while. It's only been like 2 weeks since we've seen each other.
Yeah.
I mean, so just for clarification, obviously, as everyone knows, I had my appearances at DerpyCon and Twin Cities Con these past couple weekends. We're actually recording on Veterans Day proper. So obviously when this episode comes out, it will have been 3 weeks since Matt and I went to a hockey game together. But yeah, the last day of DerpyCon, I went to the New Jersey Devils Minnesota Wild game at Prudential Center. Matt joined me for the game. It was a good time.
Yeah. I live about 45 minutes south of the Devil's Arena, so that's why I was there at the game with Mike.
And then hilariously, 4 days later, when I flew out to Minnesota, I went to go see the Devils play the Wild again in Minnesota. So
nice.
But I did do Derpy Mania at Derpy Con. Very fun panel. We will have that up on the YouTube and up on the Awesomania section of the website in the coming days. Same with Awesomania live from Twin Cities Con, which had Maki Roll and Michael Mosley as my guests on that panel. I didn't have a guest with me for Derpy Con, but usually I don't, because it's a much smaller convention compared to the bigger cons, where having additional people is always welcome, is more needed too at the same time. So stay tuned for those. We'll talk more about some of the content that will be coming out later for that. On current events in the world of pro wrestling. Well, TKO put in their SEC filing and listed no shit Sherlock Vince McMahon as a liability. Because of all the scandals and everything and the investigations. And Vince is apparently selling about $700 million worth of stock in TKO, which is expected that Ari Emanuel and I think one other higher up in Endeavor are expected to be purchasing those stocks.
So, not going to lie, I think this was Ari Emanuel's plan from the beginning. Was to get the company, you know, you gotta have Vince involved at first, you know, stroke Vince's little wee wee and tell him, oh yeah, you'll be in the a board member, blah blah blah, this and that, and then once everything comes down and the sale's final, hey, get the fuck out.
Yeah, and not only that, but like, and we talked about this on the last episode, when Vince got completely pulled from creative by Ari Emanuel, because Ari Emanuel is also the type of person that is the type of person that goes, this is your job title, this is what I expect you to do. Hunter, you know, Paul Levesque is, you know, the chief officer of creative and stuff like that. His job is to do the creative for the WWE television product. That's his job. The writers report to him. They don't report to Vince. And by pulling Vince out of creative, like, yeah, you can kind of tell that was the very first sign of, Ari Emanuel really like laying down the law of, this is how the company is going to be run. This is what you need to focus on. And the thing that Vince needs to focus on is, you know, securing the TV rights and stuff like that, which obviously SmackDown is going to USA Network in October of 2024. And there's talk now that they might change nights, because what TKO could be doing is having WWE pay-per-views potentially be on Friday nights, with UFC pay-per-views being Saturday nights, but in the same location.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that was something I read like a day or two ago, and I was like, okay, that's kind of interesting, but I'm also not a fan of the pay-per-views on a Friday night.
Honestly, like, go back to Sunday night
No,
pay-per-views.
actually, I love the idea of Saturday night pay-per-views. I prefer Saturday night pay-per-views over Sunday pay-per-views. Especially like, well, and I'll say this, when Vince was running the creative, and actually this is a knock on Tony Khan too. But like, when you load up your cards with so many matches and it makes it run so long on a Sunday night, trying to stay up until, like, I remember the one WrestleMania where they had the WrestleMania end almost at 1 o'clock in the morning. And it's like, it's too much, you know? Whereas if it's on a Saturday night, it's a little bit more palpable to take. Friday night's a little bit more palpable to take too, but I don't know. I always like the idea of doing a pay-per-view on a Saturday because I'm able to relax during the day and then take in the pay-per-view. I don't feel like all exhausted trying to watch a pay-per-view on a Friday. You know what I mean? Because you've gone to work and, you know, try to relax. But
I mean, I like the idea of Friday because that would be a way for me to unwind watching a pay-per-view,
oh, yeah.
like after a long week of work. But I mean, I get why people like Saturdays. Me myself, I don't like change, so I'm a traditionalist. So I loved the Sunday pay-per-views. It was like, for me, that was a cool way. Like when I was in the Attitude Era, basically, I was in high school, so it was always cool to have. You have your pay-per-view, your weekend is over. It's a cool way to start your week, and then boom, the next night after a long day of school, back from trying to recover from that pay-per-view, boom, you got Monday Night Raw for 2.5 hours, which was
Well,
cool.
the funny thing is that you say that. It's like, you know, back then the Raw was 2 hours and pay-per-views were maybe like 3 hours at the
Well,
most.
no, but I'm still, again, it's more, that was more about me being a creature of habit, not a fan of change.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I understand why people want the Saturday pay-per-views. It
We want
makes
to be able
sense
to
to
sleep.
want the
We want to be
Saturday
able to
pay-per-view.
know if the pay-per-view is going to go past midnight. Am I going to be able to sleep the hell in the next day or something so I can recover from the pay-per-view? But anyways, going back to the original point, yeah, I could see this as a way of them slowly but surely phasing Vince out. Like you had said, hey, we need Vince as part of the deal to make the deal happen. Now we can start phasing him out. First, we phase him out of creative. We let Paul Levesque, Hunter, you know, do it because that's what his job title is. And now we have clarity on the creative side of WWE of who the writers and the people report to when it comes to the creative of the show.
I would say though, Mike, that they're doing it, they're phasing them out a little quicker than probably people thought, because if he's selling $700 million
Well, see,
worth
here's
of
the thing.
stock.
He owns like 28 million stock, but he's only selling like 8.4 shares of it. So, of the 28 million shares that he has, he's only selling like 8 million of it. So, he still has like 20 million shares of stock. So, yeah, it's a start, but I could see. You know, say in the next quarter, right? They go into that next financial quarter for fiscal year, and they say, all right, Vince is now selling another, say, 6.5 million shares of stock. And then the next quarter he sells another like 6.5 shares of stock, you know, and you see it over a gradual time that he continues to sell the stock. That's what I think they're probably going to do. They're probably going to do a more gradual, you know, gradual thing rather than a super fast thing. Because, yeah, that's just how I kind of see it in that regards. So, but also, I had mentioned that Vince needs to get like TV rights. That's his focus. It was also just announced this past week that starting in October of 2024, NXT is moving to the CW,
Oh, God.
which is good there's a lot of excitement towards it because it's going towards broadcast television. And that's something that a lot of people, like, they really loved having SmackDown on Fox because the ratings went up because it was on broadcast television. And so, yeah,
but here's the problem. The CW is like for third rate television shows that, you know, 14 to 22 year old girls watch.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, is that the funny thing is, what did the CW used to be back in the day?
Well, that's back in the day.
No, no, but the thing is, though, what did it used to be? It used to be UPN. And UPN, and even in the early days of CW, were very good for SmackDown. So even it doesn't really matter, like, what other programming is on that channel. That channel in general has always been very good to WWE. And so, but here's the other thing. The other thing that, you know, we're still waiting to see is that apparently the Billy Corgan and the NWA were in contract negotiations with CW to bring NWA to CW. Now, whether or not that's still going to happen, that's a wait and see, but there is rumors that because of a segment on the most recent pay-per-view, which involved cocaine, you know, that kind of pushed some of the CW executives away from NWA, but we don't know for sure, but we'll see what happens when it comes to that. But I think it's a good thing for them to at least keep one show on broadcast television. I think it's important to at least have one of your shows on broadcast television. Plus, it's going to allow NXT to breathe on its own. You know what I mean? Because, like, when NXT started, it was strictly on the WWE network. And then when AEW came to town, it's like, oh, well, we're going to put NXT on USA Network. And it has been ever since. And in a way, it really hasn't been the NXT of WWE Network. It's been kind of like the bastard child to Raw. And I think by it being able to move the CW and kind of be on its own will allow it to go back to being, you know, like the NXT that we remember it being. I mean, it won't be the exact NXT that we loved during the Black and Gold era on the network, but at least it'll have its chance to go back to being its own thing again, like it was when it was on WWE Network.
That's true.
And then all that's really left now is the contract, the TV rights for Monday Night Raw, which, for the love of God, do not move Monday Night Raw off of Mondays. Like, that was the thing Ari Emanuel was going about. Like, oh, I'm okay with moving Raw off of Mondays. And everyone's like, the hell you are.
Yeah.
The hell you are.
It's Monday Night Raw for a reason.
Yeah, and you don't take a show that's been on Monday for 30 years and then move it off of Mondays. It's like, it's like The Simpsons. You don't take The Simpsons off of Sunday nights. You don't take Family Guy off of Sunday nights on Fox. Like, that's their home. That's their time slots. You know, it's been like that for decades. You don't change that.
Yeah.
So, and then, not a whole lot of other news. Obviously we have AEW Full Gear coming up. And then you got Survivor Series coming up. Obviously, if you watch SmackDown, or if you watch Crown Jewel, which I didn't actually get to watch it because I was in Minnesota at the time for Twin Cities, and I just never had the chance to sit down and watch it. But Kairi Sane returned to WWE, and she is now aligned, as we learned on SmackDown last night. She is now aligned and part of Damage Control, and so is now Asuka. So you now have the Women's Champion Io Sky, the Kabuki Warriors reunited in Asuka and Kairi Sane, And then you have Bailey and the injured Tegan Nox. Or not Tegan Nox, Dakota Kai. And Damage Control now. Which makes you believe that we're going to get a War Games match with the women with those four, minus Dakota, because obvious injury, against what will look like Charlotte Flair, Bianca Belair, Shotzi, and like one other woman. So, because we already have the men's War Game match, which is Judgment Day versus Cody Rhodes, Jey Uso, Sami Zayn, and I'm blanking on the fourth guy for them right now.
Wait, who was it? What was it?
It's Judgment Day versus Cody. Oh, Seth Rollins is the fourth guy.
Yeah.
So it's Seth Rollins, Sami Zayn, Jey Uso, and Cody Rhodes versus the Judgment Day of Finn Balor, Damian Priest, Dominic Mysterio, and JD McDonagh. Because at this point now, JD McDonagh is part of Judgment Day. So, which is nice. It's nice that they finally kind of incorporated them fully into that group. So, but yeah. That's really it on the news front of things. There wasn't a whole heck of a lot, but yet again, we're also recording a lot earlier than we normally do. Because obviously Thanksgiving's coming up, and we'll probably record early next month too, because of Christmas and Hanukkah and whatnot and New Year's.
Yep.
So with that, we are going to shift on over. We had three pay-per-views in the month of November in 1998. And we're starting with Extreme Championship Wrestling, November to Remember 1998, which took place on November 1st of 1998. So it's a good thing that we're starting with this one first. Excuse me. And they only had a 7-match card. Their first match was a tag team match of the Blue World Order, which featured Blue Meanie and Supernova defeating Danny Doring and Amish Roadkill, which is an amazing name, by the way, if you're called Amish Roadkill.
Yeah.
In their second match, you had Tommy Rogers with Chris Chetty defeating Tracy Smothers with Tommy Rich, Little Guido, and Ulf Herman. Again, another wonderful, amazing name of Ulf Herman. Then you had Spike Dudley defeating Mabel in 5 seconds in a singles match. I don't know why, but that's cool. Then you had a singles match with Mikey Ripwreck and Tammy Lynn Sitch as the special guest referees. Which featured Lance Storm with Tammy Lynn Bitch in his corner defeating Jerry Lynn in what is the longest match on the card at 16 minutes 48 seconds. And then in a tag team match for the ECW World Tag Team Championships, you had Masato Tanaka and Balls Mahoney with Axel Rotten defeating the Dudley Boys of Bubba Ray and D-Von, with Joel Gertner, Big Dick Dudley, and Sign Guy Dudley to become the ECW Tag Team Champions. And then in another tag team match, wow, there's a lot of tag team matches on this card. You had Tommy Dreamer and Jake Roberts defeat Justin Credible and Jack Victory. And then in your main event, in six-man tag team action, new triple threat featuring Sabu, Rob Van Dam, and Taz with Bill Alfonso defeated the triple threat of Shane Douglas, Bam Bam Bigelow, and Chris Candido with Francine in their corner. And that was your ECW November to Remember. Just note, normally we would watch a match off this card. However, while we were doing our searching, we did not find a single match in full from this card. So we will not be watching any of the matches from that card, unfortunately. But we do have a match from WCW World War III, and we do have a match from Survivor Series 98. But before we go to WWE, Matt, why don't you go over the WCW World War III 1998 card, minus the one that we're going to be watching.
All right, so we got Wrath versus Glacier, with Wrath winning in 8 minutes and 22 seconds. Then we got, oh God, this match is probably awful. Stevie Ray with Vincent, aka Virgil, for those who don't know who Vincent is, defeating Conan by disqualification in 6 minutes and 55 seconds. And in my opinion, that match was probably 6 minutes and 54 seconds too long. Then you got Ernest Miller and Sonny Ono defeating Perry Saturn and Kaz Hayashi. In a tag match in 8 minutes and 4 seconds. Then there's the Billy Kidman match, which we're gonna watch a little bit later on. We got Rick Steiner versus Scott Steiner, ending in a no contest. And there was no match time, so it must have
never happened.
Yeah, never happened. So then we have Chris Jericho with Ralphus defeating Bobby Duncombe Jr. for the World Television title. Then we have the 60-man over-the-top rope battle royal with the stipulation of a world heavyweight title match at Starrcade on the line. And Kevin Nash won that in 23 minutes and 28 seconds by last eliminating Lex Luger. And then the final match of the night, which went 18 minutes and 31 seconds, was for the WCW US United States Heavyweight Championship, and it was Diamond Dallas Page defeating Bret Hart, which sounds like an awesome match. Would love for that to be been one of the matches we got to watch off this card. And also, I was saying to Mike before we started recording that I thought it was stupid that they don't have the World War III match in full. And then as we were talking about that, I did say I remember watching all the World War III 60-man battle royals, and they are kind of a clusterfuck because it's three rings, so they're always jumping between the three rings, and they're hard as shit to follow. So that might be the reason why they don't have that match in full on the card.
Well, but let's be honest. If we were able to screen share with Peacock, different story.
Exactly. But stupid Peacock has to be a dick.
Yeah.
We can't do it. Anyways, that's the card. Some of those matches sound very, very good. Like, I would have loved to have gotten a chance to see Page versus Hart. We're gonna get the Billy Kidman match. Just for nostalgia purposes, I would have liked to have seen the Wrath Glacier match, even though that was probably bad. And then the Battle Royal, I thought, would have been cool to watch. I remember them being fun to watch, just hard to follow. A regular Battle Royal with 20 guys in the ring all at one time is hard enough to follow. Then when you get 60 guys in three rings, it's just a fluster cluck. So,
yep.
But
so with that, we're going to hop right into go ahead, click the links that you see in the blog post with the episode, as we will now go watch Billy Kidman take on Juventud Guerrera for the WCW Cruiserweight Championship at WCW World War III 1998.
Which I do think this match is going to be a banger and a half.
Yeah, I think despite not getting, because like Paige Hart was the one I was really looking for, but I couldn't find it. But the fact that we're at least still getting a match from this card is better than no match from the card like ECW. So, and away we go in 3, 2, 1. And I do apologize if we end up running into ads again, because it is YouTube after all. But given how this is not a WWE account, we might be in good shape here. And of course, Billy Kidman is just going as Kidman during this time.
I think he is so underrated and was so underused in WWE. I thought they could have done a lot more with him. I thought he was a very, very talented.
Well, I mean, I agree, but at the same time, he was one of the anchors for their cruiserweight division. He was a former tag team champion with Paul London. Like, he did have success in WWE.
Yeah, but I don't know. I feel like they That's just me. Juventud Guerrera. Oh, man, I miss the original LWO so much.
Oh, well, actually, last night, Santos Escobar just turned on Rey.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I only got to watch the main event, so I only got to see the thing with Asuka turning on Charlotte and Bianca. But, okay, so that's why this whole thing is 21 minutes long, because the match is like 15 minutes long.
See, this was one of the things that WCW didn't need to do.
Well, no, this is actually something that Eddie and the others in the company did on their own. So kind of like with Jericho doing the whole Goldberg feud thing, where Jericho is doing it on his own, this is them kind of going into business for themselves because they're getting tired of being railroaded by the whole NWO stuff. So, like, in a way, like, when you read about the history about, like, what, and you hear the interviews, you know, a lot of these, because, like, apparently when Eddie and them started up the LWO, like, they were doing everything backstage. Like, NWO and Bischoff were doing everything in their power to squash them.
Wow.
Because keep in mind, we're like a good year away from Eddie, Malenko, Perry Saturn, and Benoit leaving the company. We're I think a few short months away from Jericho leaving the company. And actually we're a couple months away from the Giant leaving the company and going to WWE. Because if I remember right, Giant debuts in as the Big Show in WWE in February of 99. And then Jericho is a few months after that.
Jericho was August.
August of 99. So that's a few months after Big Show debuted in WWE in February.
Yep.
And then you had, like, near the end of 99, early 2000, or some point in 2000, you had Benoit, Guerrero, Malenko, and Saturn all debut as the Radicals. So it's like this is the time frame now. We're now entering that time frame where there's a lot of discontent in that locker room and guys jumping ship from WCW. And it was key guys too who jumped ship as well.
Yeah.
So like when you see this thing with the whole LWO, it's because they're pissed off.
Well, when Paul White jumped, I remember that being enormous because that was like their top big man other than Nash, and all of a sudden he's gone.
Not only their top big man, but their top youngest big man.
Yeah.
You know, because like at that point, Paul White was only in the industry for like what, 3 years?
Yeah.
So like he was still had a lot ahead of him.
Here's another guy who's intrigued. I wish he had a better WWE run. Did he even go to WWE?
Yeah, he was part of the Mexicools with Super Crazy and
Yeah, bro.
And that I can't, I'm not remembering the third guy.
That's right.
Which was a very, let's call it what it is, a very racially motivated group behind the
Well,
scenes. I mean,
so
having
is
a,
L I mean, so is the LWO.
yeah, but the thing is, though, is that they created the LWO themselves, whereas Vince was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to have you guys come out on lawnmowers and we're going to call you the Mexi Cools.
What else?
Yeah, there's a little bit of a difference between Latino World Order and Mexi Cools. Oh, that's right. We got Little Nate calling this match.
Oh, yeah. I didn't notice that.
Well, now they just said who's the referee, so.
Thing about the coolest thing about the cruiserweights are they're just like little spider monkeys just slipping around and fighting. It's hilarious.
You know what's funny? We're watching this cruiserweight match right now, right? With Kidman and Guerrera. And this match is actually more enjoyable to watch than today's High Flyers.
Yes.
Because when you watch this, there's more technique to their match. It's not just all high flying action and everything like that. It's not just spot after spot after spot after spot.
When there is a spot, there's psychology to the spot, right? There's sort
Exactly.
of like, there's like, I'm going to do this because it's a desperation, thing, or either that or it's a finishing move. It's not just like, oh, I'm going to do this because it's going to get a reaction from the crowd. You know what I mean? Like
Like
that's
right
why I
here.
miss the cruiserweight division for the old classic cruiserweight division
Well,
and
like right here, right? So like you had a moment where Kidman threw Juventude into the corner really hard. He bounced off the corner, and then Kidman came off the ropes and did a hard clothesline to him.
yeah.
And then like
Well,
right.
even like that sequence we just watched where he went for the superplex, normally that would have been like here's like a crazy like double suplex flippy Hurricanrana, Frankensteiner spot. But they took the hey, I'm gonna save myself and then use the ring to guillotine the ropes to guillotine you.
Yeah, and then just now with the where Juventud looked like he was just gonna do a double axe handle off the top rope, Kidman hit him with the drop kick.
Yeah,
And he's just
which
sho
again
and he's
isn't
showing
like a
great.
crazy. It's not like a crazy high flyer spot. It's a super cool spot, but that's what you would expect. You're like, man, I'm not just gonna let this guy hit me. I gotta drop kick him or something. You know what I mean? Like there's psychology to what these guys are doing.
Yeah, and then like he's Kidman's showing an aggressive side to him right now, and he just did the over the top rope top body, which is a normal move for a cruiserweight. It's like a standard move. It's not a spot move,
Yeah.
and it makes it a little bit more enjoyable because, like, let's be honest, when we look at like last night you had on Rampage, you had FTR versus Commander and that Viking El Hingo or whatever his name is in tag team action. It's like you watch Viking and you watch Commander, they're literally the same wrestler. If you watch Penta El Miedo, he's the same wrestler as the other guys. If you watch Rey Fénix, it's like they all pretty much are the same wrestler.
Exactly.
And it's like there's no like there, when it comes to their matches, there's no originality outside of like, okay, what spot can we do to make the people pop that they haven't seen before?
And a lot of and like a lot of in this era, like when the spots did happen, it was typically, like I said, a desperation move or a finishing move, and everybody kind of had their own unique spot. It wasn't like we're gonna one up each other. It's just this is my spot, that I'm gonna do. This is my high flying holy shit spot. I'm gonna do it, and
And while there is a truth that you always like, because in professional wrestling you're always looking for to make moments that people always talk about, when you just do spot after spot after spot after spot in your matches, what are the people going to remember?
Yeah, exactly. I distinctly remember the first time I ever saw Rey Mysterio do some high flying shit, because I was like, oh my god, that was so fucking cool, I never seen that before. But if I had seen him do it over and over and over, I'd be like, okay, now it's just like every other spot he's ever done. That's why I don't get all someone I see a crazy high spot, I'm like, okay, I've seen variations of that a billion times.
I mean, but it also depends on who you see it from.
Well, that's true.
It's from somebody that you wouldn't typically see that spot from, then you're going to kind of go like, oh shit. Like when Kane dropped that drop kick.
Well, when the Giant in WCW did a missile drop kick off the top rope, I thought, holy shit, that was fucking cool.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like when you see something from somebody you wouldn't expect it from, it's like, okay, cool. Like, let's be honest, when we watch Keith Lee, you know, do some of the things he does, we're like, oh shit, that's amazing, because like that's a big dude who you,
I mean, I thought it was amazing at first, now I'm just kind of like, eh, okay.
But the thing is though, is that like, but what I'm saying is like, to see a big dude like a Keith Lee or a Bronson Reed do some of the athletic things that they do, and they keep it kind of contained in, they don't do it all the time, but when they break it out, it means something more. Because like they're emptying the tank and like throwing literally everything up to the kitchen sink, you know, when it comes to those type of matches, when they need to do it, which is really nice. Because like, let's be honest, some of the big guys can do some cruiserweight moves, and that just like shocks you when they do it, because like, holy crap, I didn't know like Keith Lee or Bronson Reed or Samoa Joe can do those type of moves. That's amazing. I mean, shit, remember when Bam Bam Bigelow was doing half the shit he was doing?
Oh, yeah, Bam Bam was the best.
I mean, it's kind of like the same mentality.
Oh,
he almost fucked that up.
He could have torn his. He could have torn the fuck out of his knee if he messed that up, man. Oof.
Actually, the person he could have messed up, not him, but Kidman.
Well, but did you see his knee buckle a little bit? His knee started to buckle. When the rope started to give out, so if he had landed funny on that knee, he would have fucked it.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, is that when he hit the move, it looked like he hit Kidman in the knees in a very weird way. A nice move.
Yeah. See, that's what I liked about the WCW Cruiserweight division was they're working a regular style match, but they throw in high spots. It's not a high spot fest. Like, it's fucking great.
It's not like watching the Young Bucks.
Yeah. God, I can't stand the Young Bucks.
Although it'll be interesting to see their match at Full Gear as they take on the Golden Jets of Kenny Omega and Chris Jericho.
No, because it's a match that has the Young Bucks in it. It's going to be boring.
Well, there's a story going into it, though, and that story is what's going to make the match intriguing, because the Bucks don't like the fact that Jericho is teaming with Omega, and they're going by the name of the Golden Jets, because obviously they're both from Winnipeg and the Winnipeg Jets. Hockey references, obviously. But the thing is, though, is that because of their battles with Jericho since the beginning of AEW, they're like, oh, we don't like this, we don't trust this. So, like, the stipulation on the match, oh, that was very nice by Kidman there. The stipulation of the match is that if the Young Bucks beat Jericho and Omega, Jericho and Omega cannot team up anymore. So, like, there's a nice little added stipulation that's going to at least make the match more interesting to watch, because you want to know how the story plays out in the match itself.
The match will be intriguing at two spots. It'll be intriguing before the bell rings and after the bell rings. But once the bell rings, it'll be a shit show because it's got the Bucks in it. Oh, that was fucking cool. That may be just my personal bias against the Bucks. I'll admit that 100%. But yeah, the intrigue, there is intrigue in the beginning, and if they lose, it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. But the match itself, I will not be tuning in for. Dude, how about that? The freaking Billy Kidman almost caught himself in half.
I find it interesting that this, I mean, obviously we're not able to see the other matches, but it's kind of cool seeing this match end up utilizing all three rings outside of that World War III match.
Yeah, so they kind of, during these pay-per-views, that was kind of one of the things, like, a few matches would do that, like, they would kind of try to utilize all the rings. But what would have been cool, and this might still be the stipulation, I don't know, but and I don't remember if it was in the beginning or not, but it would be cool if, yes, you can use the other two rings, but the match can only end in the ring that it started in. That would have been cool. Because then you could have gotten spots where, like, somebody goes for a pin and the ref doesn't count it because they're not in the right ring, and
honestly, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if that's how, like, maybe the DDP Bret Hart match would have been, but for a match like this, I can see them being like, well, you guys are going to be utilizing the other rings a little bit more. Damn, landed on his feet. Listen, do you know why you got a two count? Because you're teabagging him too hard, okay?
He wanted to be in the Imagine Dragons, okay? Imagine dragging these nuts across your face. No, but actually, I'm a big fan of Hoovy's ring gear in this match. This was clearly after the Jericho, the Mask Collector.
Oh yeah, no, we actually watched that pay per view when Jericho unmasked Guerrero.
Did we?
Yeah, we did.
I don't remember. My memory
because that was 90. That was 97.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah, we watched the unmasking of Juventude.
Was that at Starcade?
Maybe.
Yeah, it might have been.
I can look it up.
This match has been really fucking good.
Oh yeah.
Did you ever see the thing where Goldberg said that he would like sneak to the curtain to watch all of the cruiserweight matches because he thought it was such a good division?
Yeah.
Oh, that was awesome. That was awesome. That's a really creative way to do that. Wow, dude, what a great match. Oh, great.
And here's your full LWO in the ring.
Well, let's see, we got La Parca, we got...
You got La Parca, you got...
Can't remember the guy with the horns on his. I'm trying to.
That might have been Psychosis.
That is Psychosis. Good call there, Mike.
I'm trying to figure out who the other guys are. Oh, it might be Chavo Guerrero.
Yeah, maybe. Chavo's one of them, but
no, Chavo's not in the ring.
Oh no, you're right.
It's a little too blurry. I can't really tell. Now, keep in mind, one of the funny things is that Ray never wanted to be LWO in WCW. like legitimately. Everyone just chasing him to the back. It's like chasing a small child into the back.
All right, so that was the match from World War III, 1998. What do you think of it, Mike?
That was a good match. It was a good, solid match. Let's see here something real quick.
What are you checking on the?
So I guess it was in Oh, so it was earlier this year. It was at Super Brawl 8 when Guerrero challenged Jericho for the title in a masked versus title match.
Gotcha.
And because I remember we did that earlier this year.
So here were the members of the original LWO. Okay, you had Eddie Guerrero, Hector Garza,
okay,
Damian, Damian, El Dandy, Psychosis, La Parca, Spider, Rey Mysterio Jr., Juventud Guerrera, Cyclop, Silver King, and Volano V.
So essentially almost all of the Latino wrestlers.
Yeah, essentially. So only three of them were in the group all the way through and were original members. So the original members that were there all the way through were Eddie Guerrero, Hector Garza, and Damian.
Interesting.
And I think, I know Hector Garza was in it in WWE, wasn't he?
Who was? So
didn't they bring it to WWE in the Attitude Era? In the
No, LWO. LWO just came out recently this year.
Oh, that's right. Okay, yeah. So I must be just thinking of the Mexicals then.
Yeah. So with that was WCW World War III, which brings us now to WWF Survivor Series 1998. And oh boy, there's a lot of matches.
But, oh my god!
But there's a reason there's a lot of matches.
They're short matches.
Yeah, well, so what it is that they're doing the whole, because the last episode we did the whole thing where Austin did the pin on both Undertaker and Kane, which he declared himself the winner, and obviously the title was vacated. So there's a tournament for the WWE title, which is currently vacant going into this pay-per-view. I will go over tournament brackets in a moment, but first I'm going to go through the actual results, and we're going to skip the last match because that is the match we will be watching. So there was a dark match of Too Much of Brian Christopher and Scott Taylor defeating the Hardy Boys in tag team action. There's no time because it wasn't on television or anything like that. Then on Heat, we would have three matches. The Job Squad of Bob Holly and Scorpio with Al Snow and Head defeating the Legion of Doom of Animal and Draws in tag team action. Val Venus defeating Tiger Ali Singh with Babu in singles action, and then Gangrel with Christian and Edge defeating Steve Blackman in singles competition. Now, here we go with this. Now we're going to go into the actual pay-per-view, and this is where I'm going to go into the tournament bracket. So I'm scrolling down for it. In the first round, you had Ken Shamrock defeat Goldust via submission. Then you had The Rock beat Big Boss Man in 3 seconds via pin. But note, Triple H was originally in the bracket, set to face The Rock in the first round, but his injury prevented him from competing, was replaced by Big Boss Man, which is why Boss Man was there. Because the very next match, you had Stone Cold Steve Austin defeat Big Boss Man by disqualification to advance.
Jesus.
And then you had Steven Regal and X-Pac going to a double count out after 8 minutes and 10 seconds. And then you had Al Snow defeating Jeff Jarrett via pinfall. And then you had Mankind's opponent in the first round was billed as a mystery opponent. It was not announced until the match time, and Mankind took on Dwayne Gill and pinned him in 30 seconds.
Gilbert.
Now, I read it off of the tournament brackets. This is the actual order of the matches when they took place. First round matches went in this order. Mankind defeating Dwayne Gill, Al Snow defeating Jeff Jarrett, Steve Austin defeating Boss Man by disqualification, Steven Regal and X-Pac ending in a double countout, Ken Shamrock defeating Goldust by submission, and then The Rock defeating Big Boss Man. It should be noted, X-Pac's neck injury was not mentioned on screen, which is probably the reason for the double countout, and Steven Regal left the company soon after for WCW without making another appearance until 2000 as William Regal. So just some interesting stuff there. Then we go into the quarterfinals, because those are the next set of matches that we get. And you had The Undertaker defeat Kane via pinfall, The Rock defeating Ken Shamrock via pinfall. Steve Austin got a bye because of the fact that there's no winner in the Regal X-Pac match. And then you had Mankind defeat Al Snow via submission. And the actual order of those matches was The Rock defeating Big Boss. First round. Undertaker with Paul Bearer defeating Kane, Mankind defeating Al Snow, and then The Rock defeating Ken Shamrock. So that was the order that those quarterfinal matches actually took place. Then next up, we had Sable defeat Jacqueline with Mark Miro in her corner to become the new WWF Women's Champion in 3 minutes and 14 seconds. And it should be noted that Mark Miro would also disappear from programming firstly to support his wife Sable in her career before leaving the company altogether. So this is the last time we'd really see Mark Miro. Then we have our tournament semifinal matches, where Mankind would defeat Stone Cold Steve Austin in a 10-minute, 27-second match, which was our second longest match of the entire card. And then you would have The Rock defeat The Undertaker by disqualification. So now your tournament final is The Rock versus Mankind for the title. And then in our second-to-last match, you had the New Age Outlaws of Billy Gunn and Road Dogg defeating D'Lo Brown and Mark Henry and the Headbangers in a triple threat tag team match for the tag team titles. That would be the third longest match, which would then bring us to our main event of The Rock versus Mankind in the tournament final match for the vacant WWF title. There's 18 matches total on this freaking card, if you include dark matches and heat.
Would have been such a long damn night.
I mean, the good thing is here is that, like, obviously first round matches outside of the X-Pac Steven Regal match, which went 8 minutes and 10 seconds, majority of the first round matches averaged around like maybe 2.5 minutes. Cause like you had match times of 30 seconds, 3:31, 3:20, 8:10, 5:56, and 3 seconds. And then when you went into the quarterfinal, you had matches that were 7 minutes, 16 seconds, 3:55, and 8:20. The women's title match was 3:14. The semifinal matches were 10:27 and 8:24, respectively. And then the tag team title match was 10 minutes, 10 seconds. So you end up getting a lot of short matches, which is why, you know, yes, it looks a lot, but it isn't a lot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So with that, we are going to move on. Are you able to see the stream still perfectly fine?
Yes.
Okay, good. So you see the ad for full match?
Yep.
All right, cool. So we're just going to get through this advertisement. And just to let everyone know, we do apologize. This is on the WWE's YouTube page. So there will be ads galore. We will do our best to try to skip them to keep the flow going nicely, but we apologize. And of course, the link is in our thing as well. So
These two always had great matches together.
It's a shame WWE YouTube page doesn't give us the entrances.
You know, to be honest, I kind of like it that way.
Well, like, we could have compared the sets between WCW and WWE on these ones.
Ah, yeah.
Now, the funny thing is, we're going from a cruiserweight match to like a heavyweight match. And there we go. We got our first commercial break. Thanks, ESPN Plus. And we skipped it already on our end. That's right. I think at this point now, the nation to dominate, the nation is done now at this point.
Pretty much, yeah.
But DX is still obviously going strong.
Yeah, well, DX is still going on for at least another year. Because remember on that episode of Raw in December of 99, the last Raw or the Maybe it was either the first Raw of 99 or the last Raw of 99. Mankind wins the world title, which I think it was the last Raw of 99, because The Rock had just had his pec surgery at that point, and that was when Mankind wins the title with DX in his corner and Austin coming out and hitting The Rock with the chair.
Oh, look, it's Vince and Shane.
Yeah.
I like the skull in the set. That's kind of cool. And we're back in commercial break. And this time it's because of fucking sports betting. Fucking hate sports betting.
Me too, because I'm not even good at it.
All right, this one I'm going to be able to skip, and we're skipping it. I just think it should still be illegal, period. End of story.
Why? It doesn't hurt anything. I
Yeah,
mean,
it does hurt people, actually. You know, they always talk about, like, oh, the winnings. It's like, yeah, well, tell us about the losing.
yeah, but
And.
people are gonna gamble even if it's illegal anyway. If you got a gambling problem, you're gonna gamble. So, you know,
Yeah,
might as well make it legal and make money off of it.
but I also have my reasons that I will not say on the podcast, because obviously they're on the personal side that don't
Yeah.
get aired on a podcast episode. See, the nice thing about this, I mean, about this main event is that, like, and I mean, obviously, Kidman Juventud was not a main event match, but it's a different pace, it's a different style, which is, it's a nice little transition for us. Oof. The Rock just like lost the trash can when he was trying to hit Mankind with it. God damn it, another commercial
What
break.
a commercial piece.
And we're skipping. Now we can go
Yeah.
back to the Rock fucking up a trash can spot. That was actually kind of funny. He had the trash can, he went to hit Mankind with it, and it just like went backwards on him.
Hey, you don't know. Maybe there was some gross trash in there that made the handle all slippery. You don't know, Mike.
All I know is I remember he picked it up, he went to hit him with it, and it just went the opposite direction, and he didn't even hit him with it.
That's funny.
And then commercial break.
Yeah.
Well, the way that Shane's smiling, it sounded like he Vince was congratulating him on a good job of clogging the toilet in the locker room or something.
Assholes.
Like, good job going to Taco Bell today, you know?
Yeah.
As I continue to drink on my Mountain Dew Baja Blast from Taco Bell from last night.
Jesus.
Ooh, nice kitchen sink knee to the gut by Mick there. That's right, this is their fourth match of the night, says the guy who is reading off the fucking tournament brackets.
Gosh, Mike. Stop. Tell me. Oh, that's where that is. Huh, nice.
What?
I
Another commercial break.
was looking for. I play a sports strategy game called Stratomatic. And I was looking for the hockey, because we're getting ready to do a hockey tournament with me and a bunch of my uncles. And I couldn't find my Wayne Gretzky card to use, because I have the 93 Kings as my team, and I just found it.
So I just want to put this out there. Within 8 minutes of being in this, we've already had four ad breaks.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like one every 2 minutes at this point. Does it show? Because sometimes when I'm watching YouTube stuff on YouTube, it has the little dots where they come
It
in.
doesn't have the dots.
Oh, well, that sucks. We're due for another ad break any minute.
I hope they wait a while.
Well, if
Oh, if you've also noticed, because of the headshots with the chair, they did the freeze frame. So when Mick had the steel chairs, steel stairs up, and then Rock hit the stairs, as he's approaching, you can see the freeze frame, but the commentary continued on.
Yeah,
And then when he
they're
did,
trying not to show the brutal head shit.
yeah, they're trying not, they're not showing the headshots.
I wonder how that would affect. Do they do that same thing on Peacock, Mike?
Yes, I think they do.
So then I would like to go then and watch their match at Royal Rumble 2000 and see how. Because that was one of the most brutal matches I've ever watched, with The Rock's chair shots to Mick Foley's head. I wonder how censored that match is, and how much it
Oh my
actually
God,
affects,
another fucking break, man.
and how much it actually affects
So actually,
the match, like with the viewing experience of the match.
See, right there, Vince just told you that Rock was turning with the look on his face.
Yeah.
Because what JR was just saying on commentary, and then when Mankind hits that elbow off the ring apron onto the Rock, see, like, right there, when he used that top piece of the announce table that hit the Rock. Well, that was a fucked up move. But, like, you see the look on Vince's face. He sees the beating that The Rock is taking, and he's not pleased. Because, obviously, it's like, yeah, The Rock is our guy.
Yeah.
Because, like, JR is talking about the about how Mick Foley is just a pawn in all this. Oh, yeah, it should be noted, since we're watching The Rock, it should be noted that the SAG strike is over. And so John Cena wrapped up at Crown Jewel, and pretty much everyone's going back to work now. So we're not going to see John Cena for a while in WWE.
I think we'll see him. I think we'll see him right before.
I think we'll see him at Mania.
Yeah, we'll see him. We'll see him like maybe the month before Mania, building a storyline. And then, honestly, I think Mania might be it, Mike.
I think so, too. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God, dude.
What the fuck? I'm getting tired of all these ads already.
This sucks. Super Peacock. We knew there was Peacock breaks, but they weren't this frequent.
Well, they also didn't do them in the middle of the fucking match. So this is our sixth ad break.
Jesus Christ.
In 12 minutes. So we're literally getting an ad break every two fucking minutes, and we still have at least another 12 minutes of match time. But the funny thing is, watch, somebody who's watching along with us, they could be getting like fewer ad breaks than we are.
Yeah, that is true.
To which, if you are, you lucky bastards. I think I'm going to title this episode Surviving Ad War 3.
Yeah.
That was a nice counter right there by The Rock with the DDT.
Yeah. The Rock is friggin'. The Rock, like I said, these two, man, they have great chemistry, man. These two put on some fantastic matches. You know, with Shane being in that referee getup, that he's getting involved. How long do we have left in this match?
About 11 minutes.
Oh, nice.
But it'll feel longer with ad breaks.
Well, yeah.
Like, luckily, like, when we did the other match, it wasn't on a WWE account, so it was like, oh, there's no commercial breaks. Oh my god, right when he's about to go through the fucking table! Like, you literally see The Rock move. Oh my god. And I can't skip this one either. Well, at least we got to see Mick go for the fucking table. So the interesting thing is that the WCW pay-per-view is November 22nd, and this one's taking place on November 15th. So you essentially had a pay-per-view like November literally had three pay-per-views, one almost on every weekend of the month of November outside of like one weekend.
That's pretty cool.
Because obviously ECW was November 1st. And then you had WWE on November 15th, which was 2 weeks later. And then the very next weekend was WCW. Evidently, this is before the people's elbow is a protected finish. And I don't even think it was the people's elbow truly yet. Of course, Mick doesn't have a beard. You notice that when you look at him with the mask?
Yeah.
God damn it. Fuck South Park. All right, we're back.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Whoa, 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 whoa. Fuck South Park. I don't know about that.
All right, so we've had 8 commercial breaks, and we're 16 minutes in, and we have about 8 minutes left, so we've probably got 4 more breaks left.
Oh, shit. Oh, they're playing off the goddamn Montreal screw job.
Yep.
Oh, that's so fucking stupid and lame. I know it's not how the match is going to end, but that's fucking stupid and lame. I'm going to say more bad words.
Fuck UFC.
Not fuck UFC, but
fuck the ads.
Fuck the ads. All right, we got a schmoz finish going on here.
orderly. You know, it's interesting because when the whole screw job happened in 97 with Brett, Mick was the only one who didn't show up to, he walked out immediately. So when you look back at this, it actually makes sense why Mankind is the one who got screwed in the main event match. Yeah, see how like right there with the shot to the back of the head, it froze up. They're just cramming in as many of these stupid ass breaks as possible on us. Like, is that even the end of it? We'll find out in a second. Yeah, there's like three, like two more minutes of this, and I'm like, we don't need to see it. Oh, Austin runs out and beats up on The Rock. We don't need to see that, do we?
No.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So,
I'm good. I'm just frustrated because of all the damn breaks.
yeah, I
If there
know.
wasn't all those stupid commercial breaks, I would have said maybe let's try to stick it out, but fuck that.
Yeah, we had what was like a 20-minute match get extended like to like even longer because of ad breaks and shit, which is unnecessary. I mean, overall the match wasn't bad. It was a decent match. It did the job.
Yep.
So, any final thoughts, Matt, before we move on?
That was kind of lame the way that the match ended, but other than that, I mean, it seemed like two, I would say maybe decent cards for those two pay-per-views, but yeah, 98. 98 was a good year for the most part, but it's seeming like it's kind of ending possibly on a rough note. I'd like to see what happens with Starrcade and whatever the WWE pay-per-view is next month.
Yeah. So I mean, yeah, it worked out, and it sucks that we got kind of stuck in a time warp with the ads, but I think honestly the better of the two matches was definitely the Kidman Juventud match.
Yeah, I think so too.
Like, I felt that that match was a little bit more exciting. I liked how they were able to take all three rings and utilize all three rings to their advantage.
Yep.
And it worked out well because of the fact that they're, you know, that they're, what's it called? Cruiserweights, you know, so it kind of helps with the match that they're trying to, and the story that they're trying to tell. So it worked out nicely for them.
Yeah, I agree.
Sorry, I'm trying to get things ready so I can start getting it ready for our website, but sometimes WordPress wants to be stupid. But yeah, so with that, where can the people find you on social media, Matt?
On the Instagram at the coolest fat kid you know.
And then you can find Ben, who will be back, I believe, in January. Last I talked to him, he said he would. You can find him on the Twitters at Bob T Goldfish, on Twitch doing the gaming thing at twitch.tv/321_TV. And of course, obviously on our Power Rangers podcast with Sasha and Brian at VFTG_PR on Twitter. And then please note that due to the SAG-AFTRA strike finally ending, we are waiting for the official ratification announcement. And we'll then be releasing all of our content from Rangers Station in Philadelphia from this past July. And then I will also be having Derpy Mania from Derpy Con releasing soon, Awesome Mania from Twin Cities Con releasing soon. And then obviously some additional content that was recorded at both DerpyCon and Twin Cities soon. And for me, you can find me on Twitter at TheLindabomb75, Facebook at Facebook.com/X75Productions, Twitch at Twitch.tv/TheMichaelX75. And of course, everything for this show and everything that I do is on TXHTHockey.com. So until next time, we will see you ringside.